From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
You may have heard the chant, "We're number one," while Florida's newest list of public school rankings from best to worst is under fire.
You know, if the idea is to blow up the public school system and turn it all over to for-profit charter school entities, well then maybe that's what they're trying to do.
Some lawmakers say local governments giving preference to hometown contractors is like a dad who coaches Little League putting his son into pitch no matter his skill.
And at the end of the day, this isn't baseball. This is taxpayers' dollars. And when we're spending taxpayers' dollars, I'd like to have the best pitcher in there.
And we look at a push to increase competition among Florida's utility companies. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. The Florida Department of Education is following up on its ranking of school districts by ranking individual schools. Lynn Hatter reports the results have charter schools and specialty schools taking up a large chunk of the top 10 list of public schools in the state.
The Department of Education sorts schools into groups, elementary, middle, high, and combination. It then lists all the schools in rank order, from the number one elementary school in the state to the number 1,795th school, and so on in each category. In all, more than 3,000 public schools have been assigned a number according to how well students performed on the state's FCAT test. In a video message, Department of Education Commissioner Gerard Robinson explains the rankings this way.
And third is to have a conversation about what we can do as citizens to support our public school system and to support reform and innovation across the area.
But the lists have drawn criticism from public school advocates. In the district ranking, the criticism was that poor districts fell to the bottom of the ranking scale and that the state didn't look at the socioeconomic factors of the students. In the new school-by-school list, there's a higher ratio of magnet and charter schools in each category's top 10. Magnet schools have an edge because they cater to students interested in a specialty area, like math and science or the arts. And charters get a boost, according to critics, because they have greater flexibility in who they employ and how they teach. Patricia Levesque heads the Foundation for Florida's Future, a pro-charter school lobbying group founded by former Governor Jeb Bush. She says the fact that charters and magnet schools come out on top shouldn't be a surprise.
Parents and students have a choice of whether or not they're going to send their child to that school. It makes sense that competition through choice produces higher performing schools.
But the Florida Education Association, a teachers union, is not impressed with the department's newest school measurement tools. Spokesman Mark Pudlow says the rankings are a misuse of the state's FCAT test, and he questions the intent behind the move.
And to use a standardized test that was never designed to do any of these kinds of things, and use it as a cudgel against school districts, against teachers, against schools, and against students, it's a misuse of what this test is supposed to do, and it doesn't really serve anybody in the public schools.
Pudlow was also concerned about the disproportionate number of charter and specialty schools at the top of the lists. He says the state has put more emphasis on those schools, leaving traditional public schools at a competitive disadvantage.
You know, if the idea is to blow up the public school system and turn it all over to for-profit charter school entities, well then, yeah, maybe that makes sense, but that's not what everybody's saying they're going to do.
And other public school officials say the lists aren't a fair way to compare schools, and that the state should break out which schools are charters and which ones are traditional public schools. In a letter to school districts before the release of the list, the Florida Association of District School Superintendents said it had been in contact with the governor and commissioner about the need to incorporate additional measures into the ranking scales, and that the governor was receptive to the idea. But the foundation's Levesque says while things like socioeconomic status of an area does play a role in education, she doesn't believe those factors should be used as excuses.
I'm looking at number 16, a school in Osceola that is ranked number 16th in the state that has 87% of their students are minority, 65% of the students are free and reduced price lunch. So I think there are schools that can succeed very well because something really fantastic is happening at that school.
The state's top schools are West Melbourne Elementary School for Science in Brevard, Archimedean Middle Conservatory in Dade, Okaloosa's Collegiate High School at Northwest Florida State College, the Sanibel School in Lee County, and Pineview School in Sarasota. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Should hometown businesses be given extra consideration when local governments are making contracting decisions? Some state lawmakers say no, not when Florida's money is involved. Regan McCarthy reports a bill moving through the legislature would prevent local governments from giving preference to local companies when getting contracts for projects that use state money.
Senator David Simmons says ordinances that give preferences to local businesses could be costing Florida more money, and he says they exclude other worthy companies in the state.
We are using arbitrary boundaries of cities. If you're outside a city, you're discriminated against in bidding within that city. If you are outside a county and you just happen to be right next door, within 1,000 feet, you're going to be discriminated against.
Representative Simmons, a Republican from Altamont Springs, is the author of Senate Bill 1460. The bill would prevent a local government from giving a community-based business special consideration and letting a contract when state money is partially funding the project. Simmons says the practice of giving a hometown business preference is becoming increasingly common, but he says it's bad for the state.
The research indicates that local preference policies increase costs of government. And a policy that favors local businesses interferes with free market competition, and it drives up prices. It invites abuse and an even cozier relationship between government and those who win its contracts.
Simmons says when state agencies consider bids, officials are required to select the lowest responsible bidder. But he says when picking a responsible bidder, the state can take any number of things into account, like the difficulty of providing services or goods. He says under his bill, local governments could have that same leeway. But he says a specific requirement giving preference to local bidders puts a significant disadvantage on more distant contractors who deserve a level playing field. Senator Garrett Richter, a Republican from Naples who supports the measure, compares the situation to a Little League baseball game that uses volunteer coaches from the community.
There's a number of objectives in a Little League baseball game, and one of the objectives is to win the ball game. And lots of times you get a coach in there, puts his son in to pitch, when he's not necessarily the best pitcher. Which is kind of like a local preference, if you will. And if you really want to win the game, I think you need to put your best pitcher in there. And at the end of the day, this isn't baseball. This is taxpayers' dollars. And when we're spending taxpayers' dollars, I'd like to have the best pitcher in there.
Senator Jim Norman, a Republican from Tampa, cast the only vote against the bill in the Senate Community Affairs Committee. Norman says he likes the idea of keeping local money local.
I buy into this terminology that, you know, buy American. That's not a bad thing for me. I'm trying to get to a point where we identify American products, Americans good, and we go that route.
Norman says he thinks it would make sense to limit the weight a business's hometown could have on a contracting decision. Senator Rhonda Storms, a Republican from Brandon, also spoke against the bill. She says she worries the measure would take work away from Floridians and possibly even out of the country.
So I guess the question is, do you think it's okay to outsource call centers and things like that to India just to save a buck and put all of our own people out of work?
The bill passed through the Senate Community Affairs Committee 6-1. It has 3 more committee stops to go. A similar bill is moving through the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, some hospitals worry a bill that would put new rules in place in regards to the sale or lease of a public hospital would take the power out of local hands.
Right now, those decisions continue to be made locally by the hospital board of where to best utilize those proceeds within the local community, and this legislation would handcuff to a certain degree where that money can be spent.
A Florida senator wants electric utilities to have more competition.
A monopoly or the power, or they want to prevent someone else from coming in. But that's the American way. Competition, that's important. I don't like monopolies. I like free enterprise.
And natural gas-powered vehicles may soon become commonplace on Florida highways.
Being able to really develop this network out so that all commuters and all transporters and all operators can really capitalize on the inherent fuel savings. It's dramatic.
A bill that would revamp the way public hospitals are sold or leased is facing some opposition from hospitals. As Sasha Cordner reports, while the measure seeks to put more oversight in place over the sale of a hospital, some argue the bill is not needed because hospitals already have enough procedures in place.
Senate President-designate Don Gates says all his bill does is make the process of selling or leasing a hospital more public and more transparent by putting a few new rules in place.
First, to compare the hospital's operations to those of similar-sized, similar-service hospitals. In other words, have a look at the competition to see how you stack up in cost and quality. And secondly, get a fair market valuation with the proposed buyer paying half the cost of the valuation. And third, hold a public meeting and explain why the board has decided to negotiate a potential lease or sale, or why not. The board makes the decision. And the CFO of the state of Florida certifies that the process has been open and fair.
Under the Gates bill, Senate Bill 1568, depending on where the hospital is sold or leased to, the proceeds could go towards any number of things such as indigent care, education, and law enforcement. But Nick Iorossi, who represents the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida, had a problem with that. He says the legislature should not dictate where the proceeds should go because that's something for hospital districts or locally elected boards to decide.
Right now, those decisions continue to be made locally by the hospital board of where to best utilize those proceeds within the local community, and this legislation would handcuff to a certain degree where that money can be spent.
But Republican Senator Mike Bennett argued that leaving it up to a local board or district to decide where the proceeds should go may not be in the best interest of the community. He says what supporters of the bill don't want is a repeat of an incident in Sarasota County several years ago.
When they sold the Venice Hospital down in Venice, Florida, that was going to be the Venice Foundation. And the Venice Foundation was all set up to do all kinds of wonderful, good things for the community. And then all of a sudden, they got a new board in there, and they changed the name to the Community Foundation, and they took Venice out of it. You know, the people in the city of Venice, I know Senator Dietert and several, were really upset that this was their hospital, it was their money. And so I think there is a valid concern of what happens to these proceeds.
Iorossi, with the Safety Net Hospital Alliance, also worried the state was taking power out of local hands and costing taxpayers more. John Radcliffe was also of the same mind. He's the public policy director for Service Employees International Union. It represents the nurses, doctors, and healthcare professionals at Jackson Memorial in Miami. He says things like fair market valuation, for example, should be left solely up to the hospital board.
To sell the hospital or any of those major decisions, it's a decision of the owner of the hospital, which is the county commission. So the provisions in the bill which would mandate that the county use any resources that were obtained 50% for this or whatever, it seems inappropriate because the county commission, which is an elected body, would be in the best position to determine those kinds of things.
But Senator John Thrasher says what objecting hospitals need to realize is that all this bill does is put more public oversight into the process of the sale or lease of a hospital.
If we're going to sell or lease a big piece of property, an asset that is so vital to so many communities, I just simply ask the question, what's wrong with more public input? What's wrong with more public notice? What's wrong with more public oversight? Seems to me we're heading in the right direction.
The measure passed unanimously in the Senate Community Affairs Committee. Before the measure heads to the Senate floor, it has one last committee stop, the Senate Budget Committee. Its House companion has yet to be heard in any committees. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. A Senate committee moved forward with a bill today that raises the possibility of cutting the state's reliance on natural gas to fuel power plants and also includes tax incentives for renewable energy companies. James Call reports senators appear confident that they can develop a state energy policy, but advocates for renewable and alternative sources of energy are calling on lawmakers to develop a bolder policy.
The proposal promises to be a major piece of energy legislation. It is based on recommendations by Agricultural Commissioner Adam Putnam. He wants more diversity in the sources of fuel Florida uses to produce electricity. Policymakers, though, are very sensitive to cost to consumers, as illustrated by Staff Director Matt Carter, When he briefed the Energy Committee on the bill they will work on next week.
First of all, just kind of give you the overarching premise in the bill, Senators, is that the overarching premise in this bill is no rate increase for ratepayers. No rate increase for ratepayers. I hope you guys heard me on that. No rate increase for ratepayers.
Those are fighting words to the people who have been trying to get the state to diversify its energy supply. More than 50% of the state's electricity is generated by burning natural gas. That reliance on one source of fuel worries some. 4 years ago, then-Governor Charlie Crist proposed a goal of 20% of electricity production from renewable energy. The idea went nowhere in the legislature because of cost concerns. But Susan Glickman, an energy advocate, says a cost argument is a red herring, a false argument. And she says assertions that maintaining the status quo prevents price increases are diversion from reality.
The point is it's a myth that if they do nothing, that bills will remain the same. Bills are going to go up anyway. So when someone makes the statement that clean energy technologies, be they efficiency or renewable technologies, cost more, the real question to ask is cost more as opposed to what? And if it's cost more as opposed to that new natural gas plant or that new nuclear power plant, demand-side management and conservation is going to cost less every time.
Glickman calls Putnam's recommendations a good starting point for a conversation. He proposes incentives for utilities to use renewables like solar, wind, and biomass. Advocates like Glickman say, in the long run, renewable energy and energy conservation programs will save consumers money. Newport Richey Senator Mike Fasano says he wants to hear more. Many of his constituents once were served by a now-disabled nuclear power plant.
And because of that, Progress Energy has to go out and buy that more expensive fuel. And so I'm interested to see what's in this bill that's going to possibly have an impact, positive or negative, on my constituents back home.
The bill the committee will work on reduces regulations, restores tax credits, and allows utilities to invest in private renewable energy facilities. A House Democrat calls it a very, very, very modest proposal. Melbourne Senator Thad Altman, a Republican, wants it to be bolder. He sees a future where, say, an apartment building owner installs solar panels and uses other renewable sources to bypass an electric company to provide power to his building. Right now, Altman says, Florida law prohibits such innovative entrepreneurism.
I'm not selling that energy to anyone else. I'm only consuming that on my property, providing to my apartments, but yet I have to be determined to be a utility. I mean, that's nothing more than prohibiting competition.
Altman says we've been delivering electricity to Floridians the same way for decades and decades. And then he points to the revolution in wireless internet and the development of smartphones triggered by deregulation. He wonders if the same thing is possible with entrepreneurs and the production of electricity. Altman says right now he sees a government structure designed to protect an archaic system.
I'd like to see a lot more competition, and that's industry disruptive. And it's just human nature, and it's the nature of any economic system. When one entity has a monopoly or the power or the sole source, they want to prevent someone else coming in. But that's the American way. Competition, that's important. I don't like monopolies. I like free enterprise.
Altman predicts there will be an interesting discussion at next week's meeting of the Senate Communications, Energy, and Public Utilities Committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
Here's Ronald J. Evan with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
The Senate Health and Human Services Appropriations Subcommittee will continue budget discussions and take public testimony. The Chairman, Joe Negron, is working on a budget proposal that he says will involve about $850 million in cuts. Before the Senate Budget Subcommittee on K-12 Education, Senator Anna Terry Flores will try to reduce school sports head injuries with a bill requiring parents and coaches to get more information about the dangers and requiring athletes to be pulled after suspected head injuries until they can be checked out. The Senate goes into session at 1 o'clock with prison privatization and school prayer on the agenda. The House Civil Justice Subcommittee will consider a bill that could lead to circuit judges reviewing the sales or leases of public hospitals. The panel is also scheduled to take up two controversial abortion bills. The House Government Operations Subcommittee will hear a measure to reduce the age limit for vesting in the Florida retirement system for law enforcement and employees in other high-risk jobs. The bill would drop the eligible retirement age from 60 years and 30 years of service to 55 years of age or 25 years of service. And that's the day book for Tuesday, January 31st.
Finally, while a Florida Senate committee was considering alternative fuels for the state's power plants today, an alternative energy car was attracting attention just a few miles from the Capitol. Tom Flanagan reports the car is part of a growing movement to power motor vehicles with natural gas instead of gasoline.
At first glance, it looks like any other late model Honda Civic, except maybe for its somewhat gaudy paint job. Under the hood, what appears to be a standard four-cylinder motor. But this motor has been specially modified to allow this Honda to run on compressed natural gas. So far, at least in this country, electric-powered vehicles have been getting most of the attention in the non-petroleum power sweepstakes. Kirby Kemper, the head of research at Florida State University, says electric cars are okay for certain kinds of travel.
For me, I could have an electric car. I live 4 miles from campus, and that'd be, in fact, it takes 7 hours to charge, it would be fine. But I have to send people to the Marine Lab, which is 50 miles down, 50 miles back, and they can't run out of fuel halfway there. So for that particular thing, this is a better option.
Electric cars have been advertised as one way for America to become independent of foreign fuel suppliers. Kemper isn't sure that's a viable selling point.
Most of the lithium that we use in lithium batteries comes from Brazil. What if Brazil says, we're not giving you lithium? So you got to think like that.
This is not the first time that fleet operators like Florida State University have given natural gas-powered vehicles a whirl. Something similar happened in the wake of the worldwide oil crisis in the late 1970s. That fling didn't last long. But Kemper thinks things are very different now.
Remember, 4 years ago, compressed natural gas was four times higher than it is today. But I think that the main difference is as oil companies are getting squeezed, they have developed many more regions of natural gas. And we've suddenly realized that we have got a huge amount of natural gas, both in Canada and the United States, and that this is an available fuel.
About the only place natural gas isn't immediately available is at the local filling station. But even that's beginning to change. Leon County School Superintendent Jackie Pons says his district is pushing to make the switch to natural gas-powered school buses.
In Leon County, we started with 11 buses, and now we just went out and purchased 44 more. We have a fast-fill fueling station already operational on the east side.
Pons says a second gas filling station is being built on the west side of town, and both will be open to everyone.
So now the entire community will be able to use CNG, compressed natural gas, as their primary fueling source. And they'll be able to buy new vehicles and fuel them at either location. And this is going to be great for our community.
And what happens when these vehicles take off for other parts of the state? George Herrera is with NoPetro, the company building Leon County's natural gas filling stations. He envisions similar fueling stops statewide.
I see 12 facilities over the next 4 years on major interstate corridors in collaboration with different private fleets and government entities throughout the state of Florida, being able to really develop this network out so that all commuters and all transporters and all operators can really capitalize on the inherent fuel savings. It's dramatic. Economically, it's saving $1.50 a gallon. Environmentally, so the whole nine. It's going to happen, and we're going to be at the forefront developing this network, so it's going to be exciting.
But there are those who are more cautious than excited. One of them is Honda's Barbara Brentano.
My running joke is I keep ordering my crystal ball and it doesn't show up. It's not, FedEx hasn't brought it, UPS hasn't brought it, the mail hasn't brought it. I wish I had a crystal ball where I could say, hey, yeah, next year by this time or 2 years from now or 5 years from now.
meaning a time when natural gas-powered vehicles may actually be widespread on U.S. highways. But with more public and private sector fleets now moving in, or at least considering that direction, that time may not be too far off. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Kordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.